the count is finished, we believe we will be the winners.
Not everyone agrees with Joe Biden. It's Friday, November 6th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, we go to Pennsylvania, where the results of the U.S. presidential race may lie. How divided is the United States? You'll hear all about that. A new report shows that violence in Afghanistan has recently increased greatly. We now know why a man in North Korea tried to escape to South Korea. That and more on today's VOA Asia. Americans continue to wait for the final vote tally in the presidential election. All eyes are now on a few battleground states where partial results are close and which may determine victory between Democratic nominee Vice President Joe Biden and incumbent Republican President Donald Trump. White House correspondent Patsy Wittig-Aswara has the latest.
In New York, a demand to count every vote as the nation continues to wait for news of a victor. People around the country are feeling anxious, including in the battleground state of Pennsylvania.
Hopefully it ends peacefully, trying to stay positive.
Ballots are still being counted in a handful of key states. But after Joe Biden was declared the winner of Michigan and Wisconsin, two states that President Trump won 4 years ago, Biden said he's confident that he'll get the 270 Electoral College votes, the minimal needed to win.
I'm not here to declare that we've won, but I am here to report when the count is finished, we believe we will be the winners.
Georgia, a traditionally Republican state, is one of the battlegrounds where Biden's stronger support from voters in cities and suburbs could end up delivering him a victory. With the count still underway, President Trump tweeted Wednesday that he is claiming victory in Pennsylvania, Georgia, North Carolina, and Michigan, an assertion Twitter labeled as misleading. The Trump campaign is launching legal challenges to stop ballot counting in Michigan and Pennsylvania, saying Republicans did not have adequate access to observe the process.
We want all voting to stop. We don't want them to find any ballots at 4 o'clock in the morning and add them to the list.
Trump is also demanding a recount in Wisconsin, where margins are slim.
Either candidate in a case is free to ask for a recount when the margin is less than 1%. And so he can simply ask for it. Historically, though, recounts rarely, if ever, differ from the original count. And so it's not likely that's going to generate the outcome that he's looking for.
Hundreds of Trump supporters protested at a ballot counting facility in Phoenix, Arizona on Wednesday night, claiming some votes haven't been properly tallied. The final result in Arizona and other states could potentially be decided in court.
If there is any litigation contesting the counting of ballots, the rejection of absentee ballots, the extension of time for absentee ballots, I have no doubt that whoever loses in that litigation probably will be prepared to litigate it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Which means finding out who won could take days or even weeks. Patsy Wittig-Aswara, VOA News at the White House.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We are also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at VOAnews.com. India sees early vaccine launch as AstraZeneca deliveries run late. Bangladesh signs deal with India for 30 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine. In a COVID clampdown, China bars travelers from Britain, France, and India. South Korea's top diplomat plans to visit Washington next week as Seoul pledges an alliance with the U.S. no matter who is the president. Thai pro-democracy protesters plan to hold a fresh rally this weekend, a day after rejecting a parliament-initiated plan to form a committee to ease political tensions. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Pennsylvania is proving to be a key state in the U.S. presidential contest and one of the last to finish counting votes between President Donald Trump and Democrat Joe Biden. Isha Sarai reports from Philadelphia.
Both President Donald Trump and Democrat Joe Biden are banking on winning Pennsylvania and its 20 electoral votes. Because counting mail-in and absentee ballots takes time, complete vote totals may not be known until the end of the week. Voters like Marion Leary say they can wait.
Yes, the anticipation is killing me. The anxiety is running high. But I feel better knowing that all of these states, including Pennsylvania, including Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia, is taking the time to count the votes and making sure that they're doing it correctly.
Much of Trump's support in Pennsylvania is found in rural areas between the major cities of Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. Many Trump backers credit his economic performance before the pandemic. Kathleen Delhunty is one of them.
In the 4 years that he ran, was the president, I didn't make out better than I did in years to pass. So I'm happy.
But Pennsylvania has not always been a swing state. In fact, Donald Trump's victory here in 2016 was the first by a Republican presidential contender since the 1980s. David Campbell is a professor of political science at the University of Notre Dame.
This is a state that has a strong working class population. You know, in the past, that had been a strong Democratic constituency. But of course, that's what's changed in American politics. The working class is now more likely to vote Republican.
Trump pants! Oh, no!
While President Trump is seeking a halt to post-election day ballot counting, Philadelphia is seeing demonstrations demanding every vote to be counted, with many protesters affirming their support for Biden.
So, we know Philly's going to go blue.
We want Donald Trump out the White House. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I'm not going to lie.
But Pennsylvania's results and the presidential contest as a whole may not be known for several more days. Isha Sarai, VOA News, Philadelphia.
Happening now in Asia, Indonesia suffered its first recession in over two decades as the COVID-19 pandemic hit consumption and business activity in Southeast Asia's largest economy, costing millions of jobs. That according to the Statistics Bureau. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Many Americans are surprised that the U.S. presidential election has been so closely fought, reflecting the deep divide within the country. VOA's Elizabeth Lee hears from two different realities in America.
The U.S. may be one country, but as the presidential election shows, Americans seem to be living in two different realities, depending on their political preferences. This man, who only gives his first name as Jeff, is a Biden supporter.
I'm sick to my stomach and have been. I don't understand. I don't recognize this country anymore. I really don't. I think Donald Trump broke it.
Beth Jordan supports Trump.
Well, he improved the economy, in my opinion. My 401k is up. My rates are up. I make more money now, and my stocks have increased, and I'm earning more money.
These two views reflect a deep divide in the country.
We're divided on partisan and ideological lines. We're divided on many issues, social and economic. We're divided in, our opinions and our reactions to the pandemic.
Election night was not the blue wave Democrats had hoped. Polls had shown Biden in the lead in the key battleground state of Florida, which Trump ultimately won. Why are the opinion polls off?
It could very well be that in the pandemic, a lot of these assumptions that are being made about how to target subjects for a survey and then how to reweight the data statistically may well have been systematically wrong.
While the Biden campaign focused on Trump's handling of the pandemic, the close race shows Democrats may have misjudged the importance of the other issues that led voters to support Trump.
They feel left out. They feel as if, they and their families have missed out on opportunities. And I think that's the sort of discontent that Trump has really successfully seized upon. And I don't think that that's changed since 2016. It's, in fact, it may have gotten worse.
The tight race also points to the changing demographics and political geography in the U.S.
I think that the predictable support from different, you know, segments like blacks for the Democratic Party, you know, is not something that the Democrats can count on. And I think that they need to really work to earn the votes of blacks and Latinos and Hispanics.
Tracy Hinson from Biden's home state of Delaware voted for Trump.
I didn't see a lot of enthusiasm for Joe Biden. I mean, I just didn't.
Biden supporter Beth Jobson says she wants change away from the divisiveness of the last 4 years.
I'm praying for healing with our country, that we can come together and sit down and have a conversation where all sides are heard.
The next president will have to face the ongoing pandemic and its economic fallout while trying to lead a divided country. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Hong Kong police unveil a dedicated hotline for residents to report national security threats, sparking criticism that the measure will deepen swirling distrust in the already polarized city. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. Taiwan's trendiest couple these days are neither young celebrities nor teen influencers. They are an octogenarian duo who run a mom-and-pop laundry service and have become an online sensation by modeling abandoned clothes. 83-year-old Chang Wen-ji and his 84-year-old wife, Su Shu-er, have racked up nearly 600,000 followers on Instagram in 1 month recently as their attitude-filled fashion portraits went viral. They've even been featured in the Taiwanese edition of Vogue and Marie Claire. The couple has run a laundry for decades in a small town near the central city of Taichung. Over the years, customers have either forgotten or failed to collect reams of clothing that the couple never felt able to throw away. Grandson Reef Chang hit upon the idea of using the clothing to alleviate the couple's boredom.
I set up the Instagram account for them in late June. We now have more than 550,000 followers.
Reef Chang's grandfather, Chang Wan-ji, is enjoying the situation.
I think my face looks younger when I'm wearing sunglasses. I've become a young man. My friends, when they pass by the shop, would say, "Wow, you're famous now. You look so young."
The couple's worldwide fame has also prompted a few forgetful customers to pick up their old clothes, while some local fans have started visiting their sleepy town to see the store. When a coronavirus lockdown confined Malaysians to their homes, street traders selling durians moved their pungent produce online and have been enjoying an unexpected spike in demand. Grown across tropical Southeast Asia, the durian is hailed by aficionados as the king of fruits due to its creamy, golden flesh and bitter, sweet flavor. The traditional roadside stalls, where Malaysians have for decades enjoyed this smelly fruit, were forced to close during the lockdown, along with most other businesses. Managing director of Dulai Fruits, Eric Cham, said he had been skeptical the move would work, as Malaysians typically prefer fresh fruit, and a previous bid to sell them online had limited success.
When we started our sales, end of March, 2 days after we launched our product online, we have a lot of inquiry on our frozen durian. And by fifth day of our sales, we are talking about hundreds of orders every single day.
Online sales of the fruit in Malaysia have since slowed after restrictions were eased at the start of May. While the fruit is particularly popular in China and the bulk of sales goes to exporters, online businesses are hopeful about future prospects. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
Now on VOA Asia, if U.S. Taliban peace negotiators expected the Taliban to reduce violence in Afghanistan, the latest report from a key government watchdog is a rude awakening. Average daily enemy-initiated attacks in Afghanistan were up 50% from July 1st to September 30th of this year, compared to between April 1st and June 30th, according to the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, also known as SIGAR. Joining us is Michael O'Hanlon of the Brookings Institution. Michael, what? Tell me more about this report and what it might mean to U.S. policy in Afghanistan.
For people who support a tough, resolute U.S. approach and staying the course, so to speak, even at lower force levels, they will say, aha, this report proves the Taliban's not really interested in peace. They continue to use a lot of violence. They don't really have a commitment to any kind of a meaningful ceasefire. And so we should continue to understand they're the enemy and we don't want to concede the country to them, in effect, by pulling out. Whereas on the other side of the debate, people will say, aha, the violence is unmitigated. There's no real hope. Why do we keep pouring good money after bad? The United States should recognize this is not a successful mission and get out. So I don't really expect this kind of a report to sway the debate, especially because we have a few other things on our mind at the moment in the United States.
How badly have these talks with the Taliban been going?
The talks have basically not been going at all. So in that sense, you could say they're going horribly because there's certainly no progress. But you could also say that no one's walked away. And in principle, people are sort of in a holding action waiting to see who's elected in Washington, perhaps, and just sort of dancing around each other for position. But as long as President Trump is out there tweeting that we might leave and bring all the forces home by Christmas, it's pretty hard to have a realistic benchmark or baseline against which any negotiation could take place. So I just don't think that one could have expected any different this fall. Pretty soon, however, that's going to have to change.
What about the continued violence by the Taliban in Afghanistan? Why is that? And wouldn't one think that if they wanted peace at all, that they would have stopped or at least reduced these attacks?
I don't think the Taliban want peace. I think they want victory. And they're willing to use violence as a vehicle. They hope that by using less violence against Americans and perhaps to some extent against Afghan civilians, that they can send this message that they're showing some discretion and keep us willing to do business with them in Washington. But I think it would be a fundamental mistake to believe that the Taliban want peace. That's not what they're all about. I think that the fundamental questions are going to have to be addressed pretty soon. If Biden wins, then presumably he's not going to be interested in tweeting that we're going to pull out in 6 weeks. And he's going to be settling in for a little more of a serious effort at the peace process, which means he's going to have to decide presumably to stay beyond the May 2021 deadline that was part of the U.S.-Taliban agreement of February 29th of this year, which seemed to imply to some people that the United States and NATO would be completely gone by May of 2021 with their military forces. I don't think that's really what the agreement says, and I don't think it requires us to act that way, but a president-elect Biden would have to decide very quickly if he's going to extend the U.S. presence and then give negotiations a real chance to address the hard issues, like how do you do power sharing? And how do you have Taliban and Afghan army and Afghan police forces all coexist in the same territory when they've been fighting each other as mortal enemies for the last 20 years?
So you think a Biden administration would handle this differently?
Well, it's hard to say since on any given day the Trump policies change. And so if you wait long enough, the Trump administration itself will have a different policy from the one it had the week before. And I'm not trying to be overly severe or flip. When the president literally says we want our forces home by Christmas, and then his national security advisor says we're still going to have 3,000 forces there in January or February of next year, it's pretty hard to answer the question. So by itself, the confusion that Trump creates will amount to a certain kind of policy. And I think it explains why there hasn't been any serious negotiation in the last few months between the Taliban and the Ghani government. I think Biden would, at a minimum, figure out a more clear and consistent position and stick to that.
Michael O'Hanlon, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution here in Washington. Michael, thank you for your time and information. Greatly appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. New Delhi, the capital city with the worst air quality worldwide, suffered its most toxic day of the year on Thursday as it recorded a concentration of poisonous particles at 14 times over the World Health Organization's safe limit. The overall air quality index crossed 460 on a scale of 500, the worst since it's been since November 14th of 2019. Coupled with the coronavirus pandemic, which has seen more than 400,000 confirmed cases in the city of 20 million people, the air pollution situation has heightened health fears among residents, with doctors warning of a sharp increase in respiratory illnesses. One Delhi resident, Vinlandu Jha, is not optimistic about what lies ahead.
Situations, as per meteorological department, it's only going to get worse in the next 24 hours before it clears out. Given the COVID situation and the dip in the temperature, the situation is only going to get worse, and it will have an adverse impact on overall health of the citizens of Delhi.
Delhi's air pollution typically worsens in October and November due to farmers burning off stubble in surrounding states, traffic fumes, and windless days. On Thursday, the Federal Air Quality and Weather Monitoring Agency recorded 4,135 incidents of farm fires, the highest of the season. If the air quality stays in the severe zone for 48 hours, authorities could bar vehicles entering Delhi, shut down construction, and stop half of the cars owned by residents from being driven on roads through an odd, even scheme. We continue on VOA Asia. A North Korean man who crossed the heavily fortified border with South Korea has said he wants to defect to the South. Seoul officials said that Thursday. Gloria Tso has the story.
A North Korean man who crossed the heavily fortified border with the South has said he wants to defect, according to Seoul officials on Thursday. The man was taken into custody the day before in the demilitarized zone separating the two Koreas, just hours after he was spotted crossing barbed wire fences installed along the border, prompting an urgent search operation. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff said Thursday authorities have launched an investigation into how the man managed to cross the frontier. JCS spokesman Kim Jun-rok:
I understand the person has expressed his willingness to defect. I am not able to provide more details as the related agency's investigation is still ongoing.
Kim said border controls were being further examined after the search for the man revealed that parts of the fences equipped with electronic monitors were found damaged, possibly by typhoons. He added that there was no sign of unusual movement by North Korean troops. The attempted defection comes just as Seoul reopens tours to the southern part of the DMZ. The tours had been suspended in October of last year after an outbreak in North Korea of African swine fever. The area has seen several armed clashes, but also served as a venue for key events between the Koreas, including some of the most recent summits between its leaders.
Reuters reporter Gloria Tso. The 2020 inductees to the Toy Hall of Fame have been announced. Shelley Adler has all the information.
Of the 12 finalists, three toys made it.
The 2020 inductees to the National Toy Hall of Fame are the doll Baby Nancy, Sidewalk Chalk, and the toppling game Jenga.
That announcement made by Chris Bench, the chief curator at the Strong Museum, who adds it's no accident that the inductees are always announced during election week.
It has been great to have it on the Thursday after Election Day, because whether your candidate has won or lost, or whether, like this year, you still don't know, it is nice to know that there are some things like play that can unite us all.
I'm Shelley Adler.
Thank you so much for being with us, and thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lee. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please stay safe and enjoy the day.